It's time for a feel-good Friday. Hell of a game from your Toronto Maple Leafs. Bounce back.
All buds are back. Buds are back.
The buds are back. The buds are buzzing in the city of Toronto. Huge statement win. Tuesday didn't even happen. It's a whole new series.
Tuesday did happen, but Thursday happened for the Tampa Bay Lightning. I mean, 1-7-3 loss answered by a 7-2 victory. Even Steven square.
Never in doubt, Justin. Never
game three
in
Tampa,
doubt.
Let's go. There's no edge on either side. It didn't matter how they won, but winning the same way, like, we're pretty embarrassed, right?
Mm.
Tampa Bay should feel a little embarrassed after that one. Good to get it back and some, I thought, last night.
They definitely set the tone early. They followed it up with basically 60 minutes of rock star play from top to bottom, from coach to bench.
We're back on Keefe.
To netminder. It was just a massive flip the switch game.
So there was little, not that there was like an official checklist. We didn't even put down a checklist, but I thought if there was like checklist items, things that had to happen for the Maple Leafs to respond, there were a couple things, right?
Mm-hmm.
How about a strong start?
That was Mitch certainly something that I teed up.
Yeah.
Best 5 minutes of your season.
Very,
has to
very
start.
Important. A first shift, a complete shift, a profitable shift, a goal within a minute. Strong start. Put a check mark
beside
it.
And you know what started with that? You put your best players on the ice.
Okay, we'll get to Keith.
Well, is that not part of it?
And no, but what I said was a full shift.
Mm.
They were on the ice in the first minute,
yeah,
but they didn't
I
get
guess
a full
it didn't
shift
really count.
Because it's we're playing this matchup game. Matchups, mm-hmm. they don't matter that much when you have Auston Matthews and Mitch Marner on your top line. Samsonov rebound, checklist item, 100%. Raise the level physically, three fights, lots of scrums. You should check mark for that. Stayed out of the box. Not perfect.
How about yellow sweater guy?
What, okay, so explain something to the yellow sweater guy, because TV probably picked up on it quicker than I would have in the mm-hmm. press box. Did he do anything wrong?
I mean, they didn't have him mic'd up, but there was something going
on
there.
Well, he can say whatever he wants because he's a fan.
He was...
Did he reach over the glass?
Oh, I don't think so.
Because if you're beside the penalty box,
up against the glass, taunting. I'm sure he wasn't saying like, "How are you?"
So he got kicked out of the game for just yelling.
I don't
from
actually
the
have
the
official report on why he got kicked out, but
I'm just saying, like you're allowed to.
There's
be a
some
fan.
Stuff going on down there by the penalty box. The fans were juiced up. Well, that's just easily stated. From puck drop all the way through, they had a lot of reason to be excited, and it was flowing through their veins. I'll tell you that.
It wasn't like a let him in tie moment, though. It wasn't someone hanging over the glass and getting pulled in or falling in
that,
or whatever.
No.
Like that seemed like that didn't happen. I'm surprised slamming on your chest in a yellow sweatshirt gets you kicked out of a game nowadays.
You know what? He wasn't trying to hide. You wear a vibrant yellow sweater to a game that everybody is wearing blue and white on both teams, you're sticking out. Like Sweden
yeah.
down there.
There's a lot of blue in the building last night.
Anyway, yellow sweater guy and the crowd completely amped up. Deservingly so. What a difference between Tuesday when we were there and it was cricket snooze fest.
No. That's not accurate. That is not accurate whatsoever.
Really?
Fans were juiced up. Fans did their job in game one. Team did not do their job.
Okay. I meant like
fans,
there's some disappointment at times because they didn't have anything to cheer for.
Not crickets, though. It was cheers and then it was booze. And it was a little cheer after the William Nylander goal went in. And then it was booze at the end of 40 minutes. And then it was departure. They expressed their opinion accurately both games, and they showed up for both games.
I think
I'm not in the crickets.
Justin, it was Tuesdays.
You were losing.
Yeah, I'm not blaming them. I'm saying that they had a massive opportunity because the team gave them something to cheer for. The team gave them nothing to cheer for Tuesday, and they definitely tried their best to be vocal anytime there was a hit, whatever. But the difference is, last night, they could have been on their feet all game long.
Difference was the team performance.
There you go. No, nothing on the fans. They try to show up and do whatever they can. They were left. We talked about how it was, how did you word it? They were let down or it was a disappointment to the fans. You had a good tweet about it.
Ooh, putting me on the spot.
You quote tweeted our video.
Well,
they've been let down by this organization or something.
Yeah, they've been let down by the organization.
Not last night. Anyway.
Not last night.
Physicality, certainly there. The booming crowd certainly enjoyed themselves. Especially around the penalty box.
Mm-hmm.
So the checklist is lots of checks right there.
So where do you want to start?
Let's start with the start, because that is how you set the tone for a massive bounce back game. We talked about this right before we went off air yesterday. What do we need to see from the Maple Leafs? You needed to play the best 5 minutes of your season. You needed to play to win, not play to lose. We didn't need to see any semblance of nerves in the start of that game, and they certainly did not show that. From the coaching decision to play your big players, yeah, that helps get them out there on the ice. To capitalize very, very early on in the game, that is incredibly hard and defeating when you're the opposing team. For your core four to be basically a part of almost every single point production moment last night, I mean, that's what you need to do. You need to continue doing that for game three and four down in Tampa, but we'll just start with one game sample sizes. That was a massive, massive difference to why Thursday went a hell of a lot better than Tuesday.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it kind of touched on it a little bit, but Mitch Marner having the shift that he had early on and scoring 7 seconds into the power play that he created. I mean, if there are nerves, if nerves is a factor, guess what eliminates nerves?
Scoring
a goal in under a minute.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty, pretty important. And it kind of changes the dynamic. And I think it changed a lot of things. However, like, I don't know if it's just the goal. I don't know if it's like, okay, it's game two. We can kind of like, we're a little bit more comfortable now. I am way more confident in my Sheldon Keefe take. Because I'm thinking about starts, right? Thinking about starts. And whenever we talk about starts, it's always a negative thing. And this runs back to the Babcock era. But how have the Maple Leafs started their last two regular seasons? Like really, really poorly, right? Really poorly.
It's always like they're not prepared.
It's almost is, I think it's the opposite. I think they're overprepared. I think when Sheldon Keefe has time to think about things, it's like he gets distracted from the point.
Like he galaxy brains it.
And I you look at game one, the start of game one and game two, it was what, four lines in under a minute, whatever it was, like just trying to match up, getting pulled off the ice immediately. Cooper has 1-0 Cooper over Sheldon Keefe because he gets his guys back on for the matchup that Keefe was trying to avoid. Like that is just a disaster of a start from a head coach. And really it's as simple as this. Open the door. Open the door for Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner because they are the ones that are going to start you on the right foot. And I can't help but think of the starts of the regular season and how it's like, okay, how are we going to change things? We're going to do this and this and this and this and this and this and this. And if you do all that, you're not actually playing the game that you're supposed to be playing.
Mm-hmm.
If you dumb it down in the way that they did, it seems like in this game, by just, hey, who are our best players? Let's start with them. That's when you get a good start because you're just allowing your top guys to do top guy things. It's really simple.
He put them in that position, but they also delivered. It's on Sheldon Keefe to put them on the ice, but it's for them to play the game the way they did. So, yeah, it's twofold. It was great to see that they were given that opportunity and they capitalized on it in the first.
And yeah, I mean,
shifts.
You're right. The more credit goes to Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, more Mitch Marner. But I think the wound up Sheldon Keefe thing is real.
Mm-hmm.
And if he just slows it down, stops thinking so much, this team can stop thinking so much. And a team that is ultra talented and way better on paper than the opposition is, like, without a doubt, objectively, when Victor Hedman and Eric Cernak are in the lineup, that's all you need to do. All you need to do is shut up, stop thinking, shut the brain off, and play. Honestly.
Yeah. And they were the better team. They didn't carry in that nervous energy into the start of the game. And if they did, they somehow changed nervousness into, like, that passion, that grit, that we're going to come out here and kick ass because we are the better team. And we will continue to play that way throughout the first period. They go into the locker room down 3-0. Hey, that's exactly how Tuesday's game went. And you know how it feels to be in the other side of that locker room, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you go in there, you feel like the vibes are high. The team, the environment at Scotiabank Arena is living in that moment. And it's not smooth sailing because there were some opportunities where Tampa came back, or Vasilevsky, and he's going to be the trump card. Like, he played really, really good for some stretches there. And you thought, God, any other goaltender, this could already be blown open to 6-0. It could be a really, really wide open game. And he held them in for a little while. There's some pretty good moments of Vasilevsky can be this ungodly creature in net, but they found a way to continue through that. And I think that showed a little bit of fortitude because it's easy to let your foot off the gas. The Maple Leafs didn't do that fully, but there were some times where they had a little bit of a pushback. Tampa started to get really physical and they got chippy and they got they got their guys out there to muck stuff up. And Toronto responded in a way that didn't change their game plan, right? Namely because there's also somebody on the ice that probably would have got sucked into that, and he's up at the press box, right? I think that was actually a big factor. I don't know how different, and I don't make this a Michael Bunting conversation, but I wonder how different that game might have went when things got a little bit chippy and Tampa was looking to suck people in mm-hmm. to their type of play when they were down and they thought, oh, okay, the game's kind of over for us, but what can we do to maybe leave a lasting impact to game three? Yeah, and there wasn't a player on there that was really going to buy into that, but there were some fights, and that showed a lot of grit for Toronto.
Well, everyone was within themselves, mm-hmm. right? The right guys fought, I suppose. Like, Giordano, like, he was trying to have his Spezza moment early on, where it's just like, okay, how am I helping this team? I got a little embarrassed last night. What am I going to do? Mm-hmm. And immediately he wanted to fight, I think it was Belmar, ended up fighting Bogosian because he was turned down, and then fights at the end, and it's like, yeah, Tampa gets one up. Like, Corey Perry beats up Justin Hall to a certain extent, but, like, whatever. And Tanner Jeannot leaves Luke Shen bloody, but do they feel better about themselves? No. I think they've felt better about themselves in previous instances of trying to get their pound of flesh, but I think Toronto answered appropriately.
And those two guys fighting, Gio and Luke Shen, people love those guys. Like, they, yeah. those were the right guys to fight. I mean, Justin Hall maybe a little less.
But he did it. Like,
but he
that's
did it.
Fine.
He kind of had to at this
like,
point.
It's, and that's really the difference, because these two games are mirror matches to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. Like, one team dominated and the other one other team was reeling. But the difference was Toronto just kind of faded away into the night mm-hmm. because that's not what they do, really. This is always what Tampa does. If it's not going right for Tampa, you get the rats out there who are trying yep. to start something to get something, either momentum or just put a little seed of doubt or whatever, just trying to win a small battle in a war that they've already lost. That's what they try to do. And I think Toronto handled itself reasonably well in that moment.
100%.
Like, I that could have been
other than maybe
that could have been
the last
negative.
Couple of minutes in that third got a little bit sloppy.
I don't look at any instance from that and thought like, oh, that's a regrettable moment for Toronto.
No, nothing
like, I
regrettable.
Honestly think it was all positive.
And that was when I watched when we came back for the third period after intermission. I certainly felt this is a completely different third period than Tuesday's third period. How can Toronto respond to the way that Tampa wants to play? And Tampa played the way they wanted to play in the third. And as you put it, Toronto managed, handled their business, played a professional third, got out unscathed in terms of major injuries, major, you know, suspensions. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some players on Tampa with some busted up hands. Like, they're coming back now with they're a little bit on their heels, right? Like, they don't have the momentum. I'm not sure how much momentum it really carries from game to game, but if Toronto has it, they earned it in that game.
You have to play the third period, so you have to deal with what they're doing in some way, and running around or running away from it, not exactly a good look, because mm-hmm. maybe they're accomplishing what they want, but getting too wrapped up in it, like maybe a Michael Bunting would, it would be problematic as well. So I think they just handled their business. You said, you know, how would Bunting deal with it? One more take I had associated with Keith is that he's kind of the athletic embodiment of Keith. Like, he is wound up himself. We're talking about a coach who's like so, it gets antsy and needs to do something and has all this stuff that he's thinking about for so long and wants to apply it. Bunting is kind of that guy where it seems like he's wound up and he doesn't know how to use that pent up energy and aggression, and it gets him in trouble. And I think maybe it's no coincidence that these guys have a history playing together at different layers on the way to this point. They're the ones that are yelling at each other on the bench. Like, these two guys seem to be kind of reflections of one another, and both of them can get into trouble when that energy is not funneled in the right direction.
Okay, so positives, obviously the start, the way that they held through it all game long, the way that they responded to the physicality but didn't let it get out of hand, that's really important because this series is going to show that again. Like, this isn't just, oh, game two was blown out. There might be a really close game when we go back to Tampa. Like, is it going to be 7-2 every game? No, it might be a 3-1 win for somebody on
No, we haven't
Saturday
seen
night.
This series played the way it should.
So that's
yet.
The question I'm left is, like, if these two, as you said, mirror reflections of each other, I don't even know what to expect Saturday night, right? Both teams have gotten their gross, messy game out of the way. They've gotten their blowout win out of the way. Saturday could just be like a 3-1 empty netter game.
And I think that's kind of the lingering concern if you're the Maple Leafs is, okay, you had the Samsonov win. Monkey off the back for Ilya Samsonov was 1-7 and starts coming in, mm-hmm. gets a massive victory. I don't think you can overstate how big that was for an individual athlete to have success. John Tavares is in that mode as well. I mean, we got to get to him. But I don't know what he'll look like still 2-1 in the third, down a goal in a third. We don't know what that looks like yet.
Yeah.
That's the one thing. Like, if you won a game where you really, really pushed, where you had to overcome a ton, It is meaningful. Is it more meaningful? I'm not really sure. But I just don't know if we've answered the Samsonov question yet, even though he finally did get that win.
100%. Saturday, I feel like both teams come in, okay, we're settled down now. You know, whatever happened in Toronto, this is a whole new series, right? It's now, what, best of three? Or first of three, I mean.
Best of five.
Well, yeah, first of three. That's what I meant. So next team to win three games wins. But I think if the Leafs are bringing anything, it is a very, very motivated and highly performing list of players that we put a pressure index on yesterday. And it was Samsonov, Marner, Riley, Tavares. I mean, that was Riley's best game.
Matthews was in there as well.
Well, I don't think Matthews gets away without a little bit of criticism, maybe. There's a lot of Matthews left 100%. In the tank.
And that's,
so I didn't put him in that sentence because he didn't prove to me that he's at the level that I want to see him on Saturday night.
Let's wrap up with Matthews. Yeah. Okay, well, you just said it. Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you, so we can get out of the way. Matthews still has more to give.
Mm-hmm. And that's 100%. A great thing, but exactly. I want to see it Saturday night.
It has to happen. Austin Matthews, the one goal, the Ian Cole goal, one where it's like, okay, we still have a game here for just a split second. Yep. He didn't pick his feet off the ice back-checking. And his guy, he watched his guy, his center, Ryan O'Reilly, in that moment. I guess he's the center, but the other center, if you're the center, you should be tracking back hard anyway. Ryan O'Reilly goes down, a turnover. Mm-hmm. You're skating back with an odd man rush in front of you, and you're not hustling?
Yeah.
That was a little bit like, what are we doing here? And again, he still has so much more to give from an offensive standpoint, but you had an offensive explosion without it, so you can't get too hung up on it because you think or you know or you at least believe that more from Austin Matthews is coming. And if more from Austin Matthews come, then you're in a really good spot.
Exactly. Other players outperformed Austin Matthews on his own team, and that is totally fine because that happened last night. But if that's not going to be the game plan for game three, game four, that you're going to count on, you know, Morgan Riley having four assists and probably the best game he's worn in a blue and white uniform. I thought Matthew Nyes played pretty damn well. I thought that line in general was almost better than Austin Matthews all in one, like cumulatively.
I think
John
Tavares has a
hat trick.
I think there's an argument that the first line was the third best line.
Yeah.
So, and that's with Mitch Marner. You just said best. I'm not going that far, but he was good.
I said Morgan Riley.
Oh, you said Mitch Marner. I'm pretty sure.
Morgan Riley's best game in blue
Morgan
and white.
Riley for sure.
It's exactly.
He was brilliant.
Yeah. And Morgan Riley needed that game almost more than anyone. Mitch Marner certainly got what he needed to an extent. John Tavares with a hat trick, of course, that is going to be very big for the guy that doesn't show a lot of emotion. That's the first thing I saw on the screen. So you're at the game and I was on my couch. And man, I felt John Tavares' energy through the TV. That guy is a very much a mime, a very stoic man. And he fist pumped like none other. Like, that guy was exuberant.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what you need to see from your leader.
And he said it, like he said in the postgame, as the captain, I try to set the standard. Well, the standard is not just like, hey, I get to the rink on time. The standard is, how much does this matter to me, right? There are a lot of pieces of the standard, and I thought the standard was met was met more sufficient than it ever has from John Tavares. Now, I think a lot of that might have been relief. The guy has gone about a million years without scoring a 5-on-5 goal, which is definitely or had been weighing on him, I'm sure. But yeah, emotionally, athletically, spiritually, whatever way you want to put it, he led from the front last night. And you want to talk about the lines, and we should talk about the lines, but I want to talk about one lineup change or tactic that really unlocked everything for them. Keefe knows that Tavares, Nylander, Kerfoot has not worked in the past. But he's kind of been saddled with the reality that you have to go with it because otherwise you're breaking up Marner and Matthews, or you're leaving Matthew Nyes on a third line that, you know, could get a little dicey, right? Like, you want to put Ryan O'Reilly with Matthew Nyes if you want Matthew Nyes to be successful in playoff debuts and in the early portion of his career in such meaningful games. So the one lineup tack or switch was basically locking Morgan Riley to John Tavares, giving John Tavares a third winger because the two other wingers haven't been enough. And those two created magic. Mm-hmm. They were under 2 minutes of 5-on-5 overlap in game one. Morgan Riley was being sheltered. He was playing not the most competitive minutes. He wasn't seeing any Brayden Point. He wasn't even seeing Anthony Cirelli. He was seeing the lesser lights and told to just, hey, don't hurt us. But in this game, he weaponized his $11 million center and his $7.5 million defenseman and got them out against unfavorable matchups and told them to attack rather than just break even. And I think that is the main shift in the game. The thing that really turned everything in the Maple Leafs' favor was getting Tavares going, getting Riley going, and using their talents off each other to create a massive advantage in the game. I think that was the most important move from Sheldon Keefe. And I've been like, hey, you shouldn't be doing anything. You should be just opening the door. And I still stand by that. Now you've got this like little recipe where you've got a weaponized defense core, a weaponized second line, a first line who can deal with anyone, Ryan O'Reilly who can shepherd anyone along in big matchups. You have your mix now, so just trust it. And what we saw from Tavares and Morgan Riley was some of the best hockey we've seen from those two all season long, and it honestly, in years. That was a brilliant performance by both of them, one of their best games that we've seen in a long time, and coming at a crucial time.
Yeah, two guys that are going to ride that momentum, I think, or at least, as you said, the relief. Four assists from Morgan Riley, a hat trick from John Tavares. I mean, the points speak for themselves, but it was the exhale that you saw from not only them, their line mates, maybe everybody in attendance that needs that reassurance that these guys are going to deliver in big moments in this playoff series. And that was certainly a big moment in that playoff series, a must win game. You get it. You go back to Tampa now with a little bit of confidence. But yeah, the way that the lines were structured, I know the tweaking was kind of a free pass with Matthew Knies. I loved pregame when I saw the lines that they were going to stick with Ryan O'Reilly down the middle with Knies. I think that was the perfect match for him. He's a guy that's coming in, and we talked about this yesterday. I felt like he would have no pressure on his shoulders. Matthew Knies is who I mean. But is the guy going to feel that same way coming into his very first game ever at Scotiabank Arena, making a debut when everybody was calling him like the second coming of Jesus for the last 2 months, right? Like he was going to save this Maple Leaf season. And then, you know, we kind of stepped back a little bit on that prediction, deservingly so, because he came with 3 games left in the regular season. And now he got thrust into a really big spot with the absence of Michael Bunting. And I wondered, okay, what kind of mental fortitude does this college kid have, right? But he played really free. And I think that that's important. Yeah, he made mistakes. So did many other people that have been playing in this league for 10 years. But He looked like a guy that isn't going to let those mistakes, you know, fester. Yeah, he gets on the bench. He's right beside Ryan O'Reilly. Ryan O'Reilly's like, yeah. Like, here's, you know, no worries. Like, let's work on this. Let's do this. Like, that's the perfect teammate to play with. If you're a new guy coming in a big spot like that, I don't want to see any changes. I want to see those two and the way that the top six looked in general stick together because it worked and it looked really, really tough to play against.
Yeah, I'm going to freak if Sheldon Keefe decides,
well,
hey, we need to do something
no
different
way.
Because we're in Tampa. Like, I just can't even imagine that.
Wait, pause on that. Because who did we talk to last week that said that there might be road lines?
I think it was Luke Fox, yeah.
Yeah, and Luke Fox would know.
I mean, that's in a Bunting world.
That's
but again,
true.
I think it would be absolutely, like, you have to stop worrying about matchups. And you have to stop worrying, and I don't think you have to worry, about Matthew Knies being out there in big spots. Because you have Ryan O'Reilly, though.
Yeah.
Honestly, Ryan O'Reilly is the rock of this team already. Mm-hmm. He's the fulcrum. He is the center point. He is the guy that you are just leaning on to get you through choppy waters, right?
Yeah.
Matthew Knies looked completely comfortable. Yeah, there was 2 minor penalties. Yeah, there were a couple like weird things that happened, but there was also a couple really great things that happened. So those two things balance each other out.
Even if it's an even result.
And it's the perfect safety net because Ryan O'Reilly is so in control. I'm marveling at it yesterday. Like so in control of what's happening on the ice. He doesn't have to score a million goals.
Mm-hmm.
He can, all of his offense can come on the power play because he's been a stud on the power play in that role. Another decent Sheldon Keefe move was putting him on the power play, honestly. But what I've seen from him at 5-on-5 is exactly what the doctor ordered with this team. He's surpassing my expectations in terms of like what he's providing from an ancillary role. He's just given you the depth, the support, the steadiness in the heart of the lineup. And when he's out there, you're not concerned. And again, yeah, the second line thing, the loaded second line thing could have worked. It could have been a thing. Maybe it will be a thing again in the future. But if he can get you through, if he can give you plus every time from a third line, and again, just let that second line worry about one thing, mm-hmm. and that's scoring goals, because you're seeing matchups against lesser players, that's probably the recipe. It probably is.
I feel like you're already seeing in 2-game sample size why you add a proven Stanley Cup high performer, big moment guy, who obviously looks like he bleeds blue and white anyway, like the mm-hmm. ultimate Maple
Leaf.
He's
the leafiest leaf who ever leafed. And like, so, he just looks leafy.
That's why you add a guy. I know it's 2 games, everybody. By the way, we're opening the phone lines again today because Tuesday, we did it. Wednesday, we did it after Tuesday's brutal performance. And we want to wrap things up this week with a feel-good Friday hotline. That'll be at 7:30, just like we did it last or Wednesday. You can call in at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or *590 on your Rogers cell phone. What a different vibe it's going to be this time on the line. We want to hear from you from the highs and the lows, okay? So this time, it's going to be a great way to kickstart your weekend, a feel-good Friday on your way to work. Call in 7:30 a.m. We'll chat about all the things you loved about last night's dominant performance.
Mm-hmm. One more thing I loved?
Yes.
Sheldon Keefe, you wrote, is coaching, and I wanted to get your take on it. But again, I mentioned the strong tactic with Riley and Tavares. Mm-hmm. There was also, and I thought the second period, despite them going down 1-0 in that period, mm-hmm. within the first, whatever, 12 minutes or whatever, I thought the first 10 minutes of the second period was their best stretch of the entire game.
Yeah, because there was some pushback, and that's when you...
Well, there was just a push.
Yeah.
They weren't even getting pushed back. They
no, were Tampa just was pushing back.
Oh, no. I thought they was completely dominated by the Maple Leafs. There was like a string of 5 shifts in a row, and that's mm-hmm. when Sheldon Keefe's at his best. He smells blood in the water, and he just sent his guys over the boards, catching them. Yeah. And that's not like, you're not like splitting the atom when you're doing that stuff. But Sheldon Keefe does have a good awareness of that, and I think he really capitalized, even though it didn't create a goal. It actually created a goal for Tampa Bay because Justin Hall went freelancing and whatever. We can get to Justin Hall and Mark Giordano in a second. But I thought, and I want to get your thoughts, that Sheldon Keefe in-game and pre-game was so much better. In the same way, everybody else in the lineup was so much better. And in-game, in the second period for sure, helped carry that momentum. And again, it didn't like make it so that it was 4-0, but I thought he was really good and mm-hmm. part of the reason why they were dominating that second period.
The thing about Sheldon Keefe is I think he's got a little Nick Nurse in him, right? Where this, he can be a part of the story.
He's got a lot of Nick Nurse in him. That's a good point.
He can be a part of the storyline and why things start to unravel. And maybe it's because the camera loves to pan to him on the bench with his red face, but that's what we see when the Raptors are going downhill a little bit. It's because this is the guy that's leading your team. Like, whether you think your captain is your leader or not, but the guy standing on the bench, he's determining who goes out and determining the pulse and the atmosphere most times on the bench. Tuesday, it got out of hand. That game was already high stakes. There was a lot of disappointing moments in terms of, like, mental fortitude. We keep saying mental fortitude, but, like, that's the difference. Last night's game, everybody was a little bit more, like, even keel. Right?
Yeah.
And you came from a position of power, though, because you started the game up 1-0, 45 seconds into the game.
You're given license to be calm
exactly.
when you have a 1-0
lead. But if you start on, like we did on Tuesday night's game, it's not an excuse, but it's certainly a factor to why things got a little bit chaotic, right?
I think he contributes more than anyone to the unnerving sort of feeling.
Exactly.
Because he's unnerved.
So he was more of a pro. Like, he was more of a pro last night. So was the performance from the Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
And that is hand in hand. Think about all the crazy coaches that you've seen in the past that are throwing sticks and water bottles. Like, you think the guys are like, oh yeah, like no problems, just go out there and play our game. It's distracting.
That doesn't happen when it's 1-0, though. You know what I mean? That happens late in game when you're doing mm-hmm. what Corey Perry and Patrick Maroon are mm-hmm. doing late in game. It's like a desperate tactic when it doesn't have any effect on the score. Too often, Sheldon Keefe is like showing emotion, showing too much, wound up, nervous, whatever, when the game is still within reach.
And you, as a coach, I know there's times for that. I have certainly felt that give me the kick in the ass that I need as a player. But there's there's limits to that, right? If you do that every single time that you get a bad call or that your players aren't performing or you're down in a game and you're mad about the refs, it starts to wear off. It's the same thing as Nick Nurse. So I think he used his bullets wisely. And last night it got a little bit shaky in the third period. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to be, I feel like I'm going to maybe get a little bit of pushback for this, but I don't like tempting the universe by chanting that Corey Perry sucks and getting up against the glass against these guys in the penalty box. I'm like, we haven't won anything, Leaf fans. I know it's an exciting atmosphere, but you're tempting the fate of Corey Perry coming in game 7 and having a big moment. And he also loves that. Like Corey Perry skating off the ice, like, hell yeah, Scotiabank Arena, I'm in your head. I'm in your head. Like, he loves that. It's like giving him some sort of like injection of power.
Gives him life.
I'm just saying, I would have been, if I was there as a fan, I would have been chanting too. I'm not going to pretend that I wouldn't have been. But in the back of my head, I said, okay, let's not let this age poorly, where this clip is shown after a game 5 or 7 or whatever, and we think, oh my God. That's all I got
to
say.
Corey Perry does have an act for that. It's probably not the right time to admit it. He is one of my all-time favorite players. Like, what he does.
He knows how to play it up.
He knows how to be a playoff rat and performer, and there's never any excuses, and you know, and that's why you're kind of worried, I think, because you know Corey Perry has that magical thing about him. Like, this guy was like a non-factor regular season. Their fourth line was great 2 years ago, awful this year.
He's already a story in the first 2 games.
He's one of their best players. Snap of the fingers. Like, he's just that guy. He's something you do have to manage, something you have to be concerned about, but ultimately, the fans should act that way.
Yeah, they deserve to. I would be so excited to be there for a massive win, too.
And it's on the Maple Leafs to make sure that Corey Perry isn't a problem. Because, frankly, he shouldn't be a problem.
100%. I just don't like to tempt the fates. And also, you won one game, and it was a hell of a game, but it's not the end of the series. That's all I think about.
Biggest problem right now for the Maple Leafs, I think, is the state of the defense corps.
And that's funny, because that's probably the biggest problem right now for Tampa.
That's a good point. And in fact, we could just leave it at that. There is no excuse to not absolutely beat up on that group if Victor Hedman's not going to be there.
They are weak.
They're weak. They're weak. They're inexperienced. Yeah, they can kind of punish you like that. Bogosian's a tough dude. We know.
Yeah, we saw him fight last night, too.
They can muck it up. They can make it greasy. But they should not be able to handle a team that is throwing what the Maple Leafs can throw at them. Mm-hmm. They're young. They're inexperienced. They're going to make mistakes. You have to make it so that Victor Hedman's absence is the determining factor in the series.
If Victor Hedman do we know what exactly his injury is? Because that guy's going to be pumping whatever the injections are to get on the ice for game 3.
But even so, like generally, like players aren't as affected by the injuries as we like assume they would be. Like, well, this guy's dealing with that. How is he going to be on the ice? How is he even going to be able to tie his skates? And yet they're still
players
performing.
Players are playing with like broken
still performing
ankles
at a high level. Yeah. I guess modern medicine is pretty, pretty impressive. But even a labored Victor Hedman, it shouldn't be a problem. This team didn't have, compared to what they had last year, one Victor Hedman, one Ryan McDonagh, one Eric Cernak. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is no excuse to not feast on a team that has lost that much of a Stanley Cup core on the blue line. But let's focus on the Maple Leafs for a second.
One thing I was going to say, too, is let's say it's a game or two until, like, we don't know about Cernak's status, too. He could come back game 4 or 5.
He will be back Saturday.
And, yeah, Hedman, he could be back. We saw Tanner Janot back. So, like, things can happen here. So you capitalize when you have the opportunity, and you had the massive advantage yesterday with a weakened decor, and they took advantage of that. And if they hadn't have, I think the series could have been over yesterday. They did exactly what they needed to exploit all the opportunities that Tampa was worse than Toronto Maple Leafs. And they did that. Now game 3, it's a blank slate again.
I do worry if we're not going to just take this for granted and say beyond Tampa this, but the state of the Maple Leafs core doesn't look like a Stanley Cup winning core right now from the blue line. Justin Hall has been on the ice for 7 of the 9 goals. 4 of them in on the penalty kill, so like that skews things. But Justin Hall pulling 7 goals out of his own net through 2 games
is a
big, big number. And of course, like there's the example last night with him turning the puck over deep in the offensive zone, then turning the puck over again at his own blue line, and then getting scored on, or the Ian Cole goal right after that. Like, it was not a good sequence, and that's kind of the Justin Hall experience in playoff games. But I'm more worried about Mark Giordano. He looks really old.
Enough worry between those two to add Timothy Liljegren into the lineup?
Again, I want to stay with my word, and I don't think you change I don't think you change after a win. And the worst guy from a 5-on-5 perspective, mm-hmm. it's 4-0 Bolts when Mark Giordano's on the ice. And, you know, he had that moment last night. It's like, okay, I gotta help in some way. And he's fighting, and I guess that kind of helped things. But Mark Giordano needs to find something else here because it's kind of dicey. Luke Shen's been very, very good, mm-hmm. very positive. He's going to have his moments where it's not so positive. He's not going to be able to play exclusively sheltered minutes with Morgan Riley and John Tavares in Tampa Bay. He's going to have to be a little bit different. And I don't think really anyone other than Morgan Riley has been brilliant to start the playoffs on the back end for the Maple Leafs. Morgan Riley raising his level kind of changes the dynamics a little bit. You're not like needing Mark Giordano to be Mark Giordano who won the Norris Trophy 5-6 years ago or whatever it was. But the blue line needs to improve in order to be like a real threat.
This is why this season, like, I think we both came on here and we spoke highly about like the level of consistency that Mark Giordano had. He's not a flashy guy, but he is steady and he helped elevate the play of others, but he played a lot of minutes. He got one or two rest games down the road. Maybe it was only one, right?
He
played a lot of minutes this year. I hope that that's not a storyline come the end of this playoff round that he didn't have enough gas in the tank, but he is certainly a guy that has the level of experience that you can't buy. You know, like he has earned that type of back end calmness. I just want to see that he's able to keep up with the pace.
Yeah. And you want to see Gio and Hall just not being a liability. And game one skews things.
Oh,
but game
sure.
two skews things back in favor of the Maple Leafs too. And still it remains that, you know, Justin Hall 7-0 in the goals against mm-hmm. department and Hall or in Giordano 5-1 being outscored at this point. Those are big numbers.
Okay, let's quickly talk goaltending. Unless there's anything else that you'd like to test, John.
No, let's do it.
Okay, so yeah, Samsonov needed that big time. He was steady, you know, definitely the ice was tilted in the Leafs' favor for a while, but when big saves had to happen, he delivered. Vasilevsky obviously was beat quite a lot last night. There, it's interesting that he never wants to come out of the net. I'm sure he was asked at the end of the second period.
Streak's pretty important, I guess.
At the end of that second period, if Brian Elliott were to enter the game.
Best job in hockey right now, by the way.
Yeah, Brian Elliott is just every second Friday getting this paycheck for doing nothing, but hey, power to you, buddy. I bet he's not complaining much about having to get into the net on a
life's good for Brian Elliott on
third period of a blowout. But we did see some human Vasilevsky moments, and we saw some, oh boy, he's the type of guy that if it's 2-1 on Saturday night for the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Leafs are pushing, he can make some pretty incredible saves. So I think it was not the major storyline coming in for Vasilevsky, but I want to say, and I hated that I brought this to attention, but he's very good at bouncing back in the playoffs. And yeah. We just need to remember that he is a guy that does not carry on back-to-back letdowns, right? He's going to come Saturday, and this will not linger in his mind. If you look at his bounce-back playoff stats, it's scary.
Do you have actual numbers that you want to share, or should we just, you know, not do
just
that.
Trust me.
Just not do. No, we know. I mean, he basically
it's
doesn't
like
lose.
18-1-0.
I think the first time he's
it was pretty
think,
crazy.
Was it last year? Like the first time he actually lost back to back games. He must have.
You know
if they
that
lost
we could take
final.
A look and it's bad.
Yeah, Vasilevsky is a stud, but he's also not immune to the stinker. I guess last night was technically a stinker from Andrei Vasilevsky. You know, you're going to have more. You know, you're going to have solid mm-hmm. efforts. You're going to have more of what you had last night in order to beat him with regularity. He is probably still going to steal a game at some point. So that means you need to be really, 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 really good for probably four of the final five games if we're going the distance here. Like, they're going to have to be just as dangerous as they were offensively in order to beat Andrei Vasilevsky four times. We just know that. We understand it. I'm more worried about Ilya Samsonov still. I think making saves in a low-pressure situation can help him ease into the series, and he got a lot of low-pressure situations last night. Confidence looked better early, though. He was more confident in his movement. He made a big save. I think it was on Braden Point early on where he challenged the shooter. That's what you want to see. He was kind of like shrinking into his net in game one. He was outside of his net, and he was making saves early on in game two, And yeah, I think if the ground isn't underneath him by now, it's never going to be.
We'll have Sam McKee join us at 7, producer of Real Kipper and Bourne, of course, and co-host of Leafs Talk. Big Leafs fan. He's going to bring the vibes. We'll have your calls at 7:30 to kick off our Feel Good Friday hotline. Craig Simpson's going to join us at 8 o'clock, and then Chris Pronger at 8:30, so full day ahead. We can't wait to hear your calls. Bring your thoughts in on the text line as well at 590-590. We'll get to all of that. We do have a little Raptors discussion to have as well. I haven't heard about them in a little while because it's been crickets since their post-game, post-season media conference that was last week, it feels like, right? It's been about 9 days since the end of their season. And Masai Ujiri is going to speak today at 11 a.m. So this came out yesterday. A coincidence, I don't think so, that our
very own
Michael Grange wrote a very great piece on sportsnet.ca. You should go check it out. It's called, Why is the Raptors' Masai Ujiri taking so long to address the team's future? He posted that yesterday. Later in the day, the Raptors announced quietly that Masai Ujiri is going to speak about an hour or two before the Maple Leafs puck drop. Like, news dump-esque, but interesting enough. But Grange has the power to create a press conference for Masai Ujiri today at 11 a.m. Grange's piece is really, really interesting because he lays out a couple reasons why it's maybe taken the longest that it ever has to hear from Masai Ujiri post-game or post-season. What does this signal? Well, a signal. Well, maybe it signals that there's playing a little bit of chicken between the head coach and the organization about what's going to happen here. Because wouldn't it be great if Masai Ujiri came on the podium today and said, we've decided to go a different direction and we won't have Nick Nurse, or we decided that Nick Nurse is our head coach and maybe it's taken this much time to kind of figure out where they're going to be. But if it hasn't come out yet and nobody's been fired yet, do you think that that's going to happen today? I'm really curious to see which direction he goes at the podium, but it does seem like there's some quiet things happening behind the scenes of, you know, who's going to make the first move?
Well, the building's not on fire, but inside it might have seemed like that in the last week for sure. Because I think this has been a really, really busy time quietly. And I don't fault them at all. Like, when is Sheldon Keefe at his best in front of the media? Is it right after a loss or is it the next day?
I mean, anybody's probably better with a little bit of time to have some
exactly. So I don't know why, like I get you want to hear from Masai Ujiri, but to suggest that this is like cowardice or this is negligence or whatever, like, no, you take your time and you get your ducks in order. I mean, well, this is a professional organization or has been, and you should be doing things not spur of the moment. You should have your thoughts organized and your strategies well thought out. Like, I have no problem
I'll push back on you for a second.
Go for it.
Because, yeah, I mean, that's the logical answer. I don't want him to come on the day after the Raptors season and just do things to do things or say things to say things. But I'll feel that way if he comes on the podium today with some actual substance. Like, it is not out of the question that Masai Ujiri and co. come on the podium today and say the same stuff they've been saying. If you waited this long to make this all eyes on you moment, you better come with some answers. Like, I don't want to watch this press conference at 11 a.m. and hear, you know, we just want to keep winning and keep building and we've got the great structure and we're going to continue with the way that we're going and this offseason we'll make some tweaks and we got some big opportunities to sign some guys, we're going to make it work. That is the last thing I want to hear. I want to hear something that you've worked on for the last 9 days that's taken you this long to make a press conference.
100%. I mean, wait till he talks, though, to have the criticism. And if you take longer to provide no additional answers, no additional insight,
like, that's like unacceptable.
No direction, then we're going to be all over you. Because what have you been doing?
Same.
You've been evaluating all season long, and now you've had the opportunity to have exit meetings, and you still don't have answers. And if it is this game of this little tug of war, this game of chicken, Nurse and Ujiri, and the Raptors as an organization just don't want Nick Nurse to be their coach next season, but you're just hanging on hoping he leaves, like, are you Mickey Mouse?
Yeah.
Like, what is going on here?
If you're waiting for Nick Nurse to make the decision if he has a better option somewhere else, or you're going to have him as a lame duck coach without a contract.
You waiting for compensation? What is it?
This, honestly, like, if this is what happens in the next week or two where nobody has made a decision and you're playing chicken and nobody's giving in and we just decide to go into the offseason with Nick Nurse as your head coach and nothing's changed, that is the worst direction that this franchise has taken in a long time. especially considering how bad their trade deadline was. If you just continue rolling out the same process, like, it's actually mind-boggling. But this hasn't happened yet.
Nick Nurse is an employee. He's making $8 million USD. Is that correct?
Something like that.
That's a lot of money in a Canadian city to make a lot of money. Worth a lot, but do a lot. $8 million USD. He's an employee that is just going to keep earning his money. To suggest that he'll just get up and leave because you don't want to be the guy who fires the coach who won a championship, like, give me a break. If that's the case, if Nick Nurse is the coach next season, it's a big failure. This team doesn't, we were talking about culture all season, fractured relationships. We don't know exactly what it is, but clearly there's the vibe's off. Like, the Nick Nurse thing's not working anymore. Mm-hmm. If you have Nick Nurse back next year, it's a failure in my opinion. However, if you have him back just because you don't want to fire him, and just because Nick Nurse didn't find another job and get up and leave himself, like, what? Come on, guys.
No.
So. And again, we've heard that the Babcock thing changed the way they want to deal with, like, coaching firings and stuff like that. Like, we've heard that, right?
Yeah.
The Dubas thing, hey, maybe he didn't get a contract because, hey, we don't want to sign him to a contract and then fire him and we got all this money. Like, I understand that. But you're also the Toronto Raptors. You're also MLSE. You also should be making the right decisions for your franchise. And if you're Masai Ujiri and you're waiting for this guy to leave himself, well, keep waiting, pal.
We'll have the press conference live this morning at 11 a.m. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith will be hosting our coverage. Then we'll return to our regularly scheduled programming once it's complete. So stay tuned on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This will be big, I hope. I hope that something comes of substance from this, especially because we waited, but specifically because this cannot be the same old Masai Ujiri press conference that we've seen in the past.
On
it just can't
Friday,
be.
Eh? Like,
it's Feel Good Friday.
Will Lou Raptors show, like, putting in all this? Now they got to be back on Monday to talk about it. Emergency pod time, I think.
All right, so that's at 11, but we've got a full day breaking down the Leafs' massive, massive bounce back win from last night. Sam McKee and your calls at 7:30. So get your coffee in you. We want to hear some Feel Good Friday on our Leafs hotline at 7:30. We'll give you the numbers on the other side of the break. We'll have the A-list, Sam McKee, then your calls at 7:30.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong,
bing bong,
bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Tuesday might truly be the best day of my life, Justin.
This upcoming Tuesday or the Leafs' loss in game one of...
Definitely not that Tuesday.
Okay.
This upcoming Tuesday, folks... Not only is it the debut of this season's Looney Dogs, but the Toronto Blue Jays announced that the king, the legend, the world's greatest, Joey Chestnut, will be throwing out the ceremonial first pitch at Tuesday's game. And I might have the opportunity to meet this godlike figure.
Godlike?
Joey Chestnut in person. He will be taking photos with fans and available for a fan photo op, probably in the Schneider's porch, which I'll be posted up at in my Looney Dog costume. I may get to shake the hand of Joey Chestnut.
Two things. It's a brilliant marketing ploy.
Oh my God, I'm so glad they're leading into this.
This is an absolute slam dunk. When you want to sell hot dogs, Looney Dogs... On the first Tuesday, who do you bring in? The guy that can house more Looney Dogs than anyone on the planet. But more importantly, I don't ever want to be in the vicinity of Joey Chestnut. Like, I just don't. Like, remember when J.D. Bunkus... Remember when Bunkus came in here? Didn't he ask you how The Rock smelt?
He did ask me how The Rock smelt.
I'm going to ask you, if you meet Joey Chestnut, how Joey Chestnut smells.
Well, like,
Because I guarantee you he smells bad.
And you know what, Justin? The logical side of my brain knows exactly where you're coming from. But for the brand, I need to meet Joey Chestnut. I have somehow become that is now the Looney Dog Queen, right?
Yeah, definitely.
It's kind of evolved out of my hands. So the opportunity will be there and I have to take it. But yes, he's not, like, I don't go to bed at night with a little Joey Chestnut, you know, pillowcase that I'm snuggling up against, or like a notebook where I put J and C. Ooh, those are your initials too. Yuck.
Yeah, no one does
in
that.
In a notebook. But yeah, I mean, Tuesday's an opportunity just to bolster.
Those are your initials too. It's tough. That was kind of tough.
Anyway, man, it's going to be crazy on Tuesday. I cannot wait.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bucket list item for anyone who
there you go. Bucket creates, list is a good way to put
who
it.
Who puts their brand or, you know, builds their brand off Looney Ducks, for
still
sure.
So waiting for the
just I don't
invite
be.
From the Blue Jays.
I'm the one guy who's, like, less likely to go to the ballpark with Joey Chestnut there.
If I get an opportunity sometime this year to be involved in a marketing campaign or a promotional aspect of Looney Dogs,
I don't know. Like, I just talk about brilliant marketing ploys.
There's 11 of them this year.
There's one more out there for
There's
you.
There's 10 more opportunities to throw a first pitch. I mean, I don't need to do that, but, I mean, I would be open to it.
Would you throw a strike?
If they said that I was throwing out the first pitch, I would practice for a week straight. Like, I would need Tommy John after the week because I would be dialed in. Like, that would be a moment in my life that I cannot have. What, remember when 50 Cent threw that ball, like, spiked it? Like, there's some bad first pitches. I would never let that happen. I would stay up to the wee hours and I would go rent a pitching coach. I would head down.
You need a mound because the mound throws things off.
Do you really go on the mound?
Well, you can.
I don't think they let you touch it.
No, they do.
Before they go on
the mound for sure.
That's far.
The mound.
I thought you got to go a little closer.
If you stood in front of the mound, there's no, like, you got to hit the. It's not even a catcher. It's like Vladdy. But
oh my God, that'd be so fun.
You got to get it over the plate if you're in front of the mound. If you're on the mound, a little more difficult, but.
I would find a baseball park somewhere in the city. I would build my own mound and I would practice day and night if I got the opportunity to throw the first pitch. Just saying.
Let's make it happen.
Anywho, Tuesday. Can't wait. Got my tickets. I'm going to be there. Got my suit. I'm going to get it dry cleaned.
Photo of you in meat sweats there.
Meat sweats. Good work by the Toronto Blue Jays. All right. Can't wait for Tuesday. It'll be much better than this past Tuesday. How about that? Sam McKee is going to join us after the break. Can't wait to get his thoughts and feelings. Just, what, less than 12 hours removed from last night's incredible bounce-back game. And, of course, we're taking your calls at 7:30. So get in the queue early. We had a lot of callers last time. We want to make sure we get to as many as we can. It'll be a Feel Good Friday hotline. That's 416-870-0590 or 1-888-666-0590 or just *590 on your Rogers cell phone. All of that to come in the second hour of the Fan Morning Show.